Monday, March 7th, was a day chiefly memorable because of pain, sort that happens in the life of every public official, I suppose. But it began pleasantly. We'd gone to bed at 2, and Lyndon was awake about 7:30. I tottered half asleep into my room, fell into my bed, and was deliciously asleep until a little past 10, and then up for desk work with Bess, and to the third floor to find Lucy, to tell her the big news about Becky's wedding. Lucy is very apt to analyze people. Her analysis was that Becky thought the parental opposition was more than she could face and overcome. She'd never marry him if she didn't marry him that way. And so, after 22 years of sweet submissiveness, she went off on a weekend to Las Vegas and married. We had lunch and talked about the list. I have a great envelope of them. The House, the Senate, the Court, the Departments. I must concoct the family list, the Christmas present list, biggest of all, the inaugural list. Lucy must provide me the NCS catalog and the Mystic catalog and her checkings in them. Then we must simply comb our memory for our friends of the campaign trail, or Stonewall, or East Texas. The afternoon I spent on desk work and recording. Lyndon came over for lunch about 3:30, and then lay down for a nap. Tony is in town, and I had asked him to join me for bowling and swimming. I had 3 fast games of bowling. My game's getting pretty good, often 150, though sometimes it's still in the 90s. We met at the pool and had a drink while I did 20 laps. We talked about wedding and kinfolks and the wildflowers of the Holy Land. I knew what lay ahead of me and dreaded it. I must tell him that his work for AID brought so many cruel, ugly, painful newspaper stories, editorials, expressions of public opinion, that the good he did, or the pleasure he derived from it, was overbalanced by the harm to the administration, to the president. What a raw, ugly, unfair thing to have to do. I felt like I had a stomach full of worms. When we were seated up in the West Hall with a drink in our hand, I reminded him of what he had told me on the phone, that if we thought he shouldn't go on with this, that if it was embarrassing or hurtful, he would bow out. I brought out a sheaf of the stories and showed them to him. He read the first one and tossed the lot over on their face, not touching the remainder. All my days with him, these last 15 or so years, after, I suppose, we reached middle age, have been such good days. There's nobody I really enjoy more. And now I felt like an executioner. He had enjoyed this work, and he had the rare qualifications, being an importer of handicrafts for more than 30 years, and for his work in Latin America, an intimate knowledge of the language and the people, a rare simpatico relation with them, added up to making him an extraordinarily qualified person for the work. He had plans for Jordan, thought they ought to have a bazaar patterned after the one in Lisbon, Portugal, which he thinks is great. But they could sell their handicrafts, rubles or shekels or francs, as well as dollars, and hopefully put themselves in a stronger position to get along without aid from us. About that time, and it was nearly 10 o'clock, Lyndon came upstairs. We went in to dinner. He was short and swift and brutal in his expression of what he felt about it. They'll hound you as long as you're in government. No need to draw it out. I'll make it slow. Tony said he felt relieved. I felt sick. He would stay a couple of days longer, make his report on Jordan, tell them his health would not permit him to continue in the work, and bow out. And so, this is one of the things that comes to all people in public life, I suppose. Having to hurt someone dear to you for a completely unfair reason. Tony looked at me rather wryly. His humor never leaves him. And said, "What about fair employment opportunities? Does that apply to me?" Not in this instance, my friend. And so, to bed for me, and for Lyndon, the thick manila envelopes, full of papers, each requiring a decision.